I'm Catherine Rollwagen, professor of history at Vancouver Island University. Welcome to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. We introduce you to the people and passions of the Faculty of Arts and Humanities at VIU and share stories about events and projects happening on campus. Since 2009, the Faculty of Arts and Humanities has been presenting the Colloquium, a series of lectures that brings our faculty's practices and research to the public. Our next presentation will be on Friday, March 13th, when Sasha Kerbler and John Lepage from VIU's Music and English departments will present Mendelssohn's Overture to a Midsummer Night's Dream, Fantasy as the Bottom Line. Today, Theo sits down with Sasha to talk about Mendelssohn, Shakespeare, and her rock and roll years.
Hi, Sasha.
Hello.
So you're presenting with John Lepage from the English department, or Professor Emeritus John Lepage from the English department. And I wondered if you could talk a little bit about the pleasures and maybe challenges of collaborative work, and specifically interdisciplinary, because he's from English, you're from music.
Well, with John Lepage, it's very easy. It's been very easy. He's basically been saying all along, you just do what you would like to talk about, and then I will behave accordingly, right? And what we want to talk about in this situation, which is, the title of the colloquium is Mendelssohn and his overture to the Midsummer Night Dream, but John Lepage is to talk about Shakespeare's Midsummer Night Dream, and I'm to talk about Mendelssohn's, and there is a difference. There's a difference, so that's what we're going to point out.
So there's a sort of division of labor where you can kind of do your own thing, but hopefully
yes,
it will come together as well as a sort of larger...
Yes, exactly like that. Yeah.
Without giving too much away, what's John going to bring to the colloquium presentation? What's he going to talk about?
Well, he will for sure explain what's going on in the plot itself so that what we then start listening to in the music makes sense. But he will also talk about fantasy, the fantastic. He will talk about dreams. He will talk about the night as a canvas. I know that he will also... have something to say about really what's going on, what are several different aspects of the play itself.
So for someone, and maybe listeners as well, who don't know that much about classical music, what's special about Mendelssohn?
A lot is special about Mendelssohn. Mendelssohn was another prodigy, like Mozart. And so he has been compared to Mozart a lot. People would say that, like Mozart, everything he touched turned into music, And so he had his early performances when he was very young. He, unlike Mozart, grew up in a family that was wealthy, really wealthy and really well off. And so there were no issues with him traveling around and performing for snuff boxes or suits or, anything like that. There was no need for that, right? So he got into music very early through his mom, essentially. There were four children and all four of them were into it. Was a pianist, was a composer. There are drawings of him conducting, I think at the age of 10 or 12 or something, but conducting grown-ups, in chamber music and so on. And so when he wrote this this overture, by then he's written some 60 pieces of music already. At the time when he finished writing it, he was 17, and it was premiered when he was 18. And, what they count as his first symphony is actually his 13th symphony.
Wow.
All the others he himself saw as like childish symphonies. They were not grown-up symphonies, right? So Symphony C major counts as his first one. So it was unusual background just because they were extremely well educated. They were surrounded by philosophers and critics of the era and painters who were visiting the household and spending a lot of time with the children. When they moved, to Berlin, his dad, who was a banker, his grandfather was a philosopher. So his dad bought this huge property with a lot of land, and the children organized the well, let's call it a backyard, but it would be like an acreage, right? Where there was a stage and all of them got to perform Shakespeare's plays. And in them, particularly Midsummer Night Dream, in that play, all four of them knew all the roles. And so whenever they performed it, different kids performed different roles. So they knew it in and out. And when Mendelssohn wrote the overture in 1826, but then he knew the play really well, really well.
In the description of this colloquium presentation, I think it says that Mendelssohn was enchanted with A Midsummer Night's Dream. And my question was going to be, you know, why was he enchanted, and what was it about Shakespeare that drew him in? And it sounds like part of it was the milieu he grew up in was part of that engagement. Was there anything else? I mean, did he do any other work with Shakespearean texts and music, or was this the only time?
I'm just trying to remember if there were other plays that of Shakespeare particularly that he set to music. Not that I can think of. There were other works that he wrote incidental music for, right? So other literary works that he wrote incidental music for, and they were also performed, staged, and so on. So first of all, with this one, with Midsummer Night Dream, there are two things. There's the overture in 1826, and then later he was commissioned to write incidental music for the entire play. So the Wedding March, which is probably his most popular piece that everybody in the world probably knows, that's part of the incidental music. It's not in the overture. It shows up later when he revisits the piece and does it again sort of in more detail.
This is maybe a really silly question, but what is an overture? Is it an opening? As it would, you know, the word would suggest an opening, right? Like, is that what it is?
That's exactly it. It's from the French verb, right? Ouvert. So it was written. Usually, overtures are written as, let's say, preludes, introductions to operas. And so in some books, scholars say that that maybe that was his intention to eventually write that opera, but he didn't. So it, the overture just remained as an orchestral piece that in concerts around the world, orchestras used to open, right, a concert. That would be sort of their opening. But then after that, different symphonies or concerti or whatever would come to the program. So
would he have considered that then sort of unfinished? Or is there a sense that it so couldn't stand alone, even though it didn't have this opera later, which you normally would have?
Yeah, no, the overture would be basically would give you almost like a reader's digest of what's going on in the opera, right? So the main characters that we have in the play are here in this overture too. You just, music is so heavily coded, right? That we have to know how to kind of recognize them. What would represent the Athenian royal families? What would represent the lovers? What would represent the mechanics? Where is that donkey? You know, all that.
So Mendelssohn was drawn to Shakespeare in part because of his upbringing, let's say. What drew you to your field of study? So you're a music scholar. How did you get into that?
It's a long story, just because family has been into music for a long time. So what is on record that we know is that the a woman who sang at the premiere of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony is virtually, I know it sounds ridiculous, but it's my great-grandmother's great-aunt.
Right.
So since then, all the women particularly were into music. And so when you go from there, so this is, the premiere was, I think, 1825 or something like that. And since then, the women, you know, were into this. And coming to my parents, my dad, so it's on this his part of the side of the family, he was a composer and conductor. So he taught me to play the piano when I was four. My mom is a singer, a coloratura soprano, right? And they met at the university and so on. But he was the one who got me into playing the piano when I was four. So it's been in my system for a very long time.
Mm. Yeah. It sounds like that's almost preordained.
Well, it seems like that. You know, it seems like that. Although sort of the men in the family, my brothers and so on, cousins, you know, who came from the same background, same opportunities, you know, all of that would say, the sooner you snap out of it, you know, being a musician, the better for you. Just go and do something else. You know, it's always that question for musicians, the unfortunate question,
what are you actually going to do?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes.
So that actually, in a funny way, leads to the next question I wanted to ask you, which is that if you had to do everything again and you had to do something else, what would that have been?
I did at the time had a difficult time making a decision between a few things. So architecture, philosophy, physics, and music. And in the end, it ended up being music because I've done it the longest. You know, it came down to that. And I've never regretted that. I always say that everything I know about life, I learned through music, just because there's so much life in it. I'm Sasha Kerbler. I teach in the music department at the Vancouver Island University, and you're listening to CHLY at 101.7 FM in Nanaimo.
And so mainly you work on classical music, which is a very broad term, right?
But I was also in rock bands. I had that period, I had that phase, and I had a jazz fusion phase. So playing with different bands, I kind of did it all. I remember my younger brother saying, there was at some point Aerosmith on TV.
Oh my God. So can we talk about your rock band? What was it called?
Could. Oh, it's not even translatable.
Can you tell us the Croat?
In Croatian?
Yeah.
Bash Bash.
That's kind of translatable, right? Bash Bash?
Yeah, I guess, yeah. If we spell it that. Yeah, that's true.
Like
that's
onomatopoeia, true. it's...
Yes.
And what style of, was rock just rock, or like was there a sort of...
Well, there was we played a lot of sort of cover, you know, music, that kind of thing. But then when we did our own... it depended who wrote it in the band. You know, it was kind of rougher or less, you know. We were together for about 5-6 years. So from when I was 14 until I got into a second or third year at the university, something like that. So it was at that time, you know, that my brother caught me with my nose glued to the TV looking at Steven Tyler. Aerosmith, you know. And he said, yeah, it's really nice to see these people studying degrees in classical music, having their nose tied to Steven Tyler.
I think that's amazing.
I really enjoyed it.
Were you playing guitar, or what were you doing in the band?
I played keyboards.
Keyboards, right.
But I taught my younger brother to play the drums so that I can get off that and he can take over. And I knew how to play guitar. I tried the bass. I found the neck too long, you know, but anyway.
Did you ever have any... So I'm thinking back to my days in a band, which were very short-lived. I had a band called... I think we had a number of different names. It was a high school thing and then into university a little bit the same period. And I think we ended up taking our name from... in a gesture that was not at all self-indulgent, a Sartre novel, Nausea.
Oh,
so
okay.
We ended up calling ourselves Nausea, and we were very bad. I don't think we practiced all that much. And I remember playing one gig at a bar, and there was sort of no one there except for a couple of family members.
Mm-hmm.
And this one guy who wasn't a family member who came up afterwards and said that was the worst gig he'd ever seen. And I think that was one of our last gigs, actually. But did you have any on the road stories of good or bad gigs, or was it generally pretty enjoyable, or was there
yeah, it was,
life
no,
on the
it
road?
Was, it was generally pretty good. We practiced, you know, we practiced a lot.
That's key.
Yeah, we practiced more than we, you know, played gigs, really, how it goes, I guess, with most bands and in those days. So I don't remember. I remember being annoyed by the fact that we never had a monitor speakers, you know. So when I sang from the keyboard, I always sang with one finger in my ear because I couldn't hear myself think, not to mention, you know, and the speakers were projecting out. There was nothing projecting towards us. I just had no ways of hearing myself. So I always worried a lot about that, you know, how that was going to go. But otherwise it was pretty fun times, you know. I can't complain.
So you're from Croatia originally.
Yeah.
What do you miss about your original homeland? I mean, obviously you live here now, but what is something that you would say that's Croatia for you and you miss it?
Well, it's when I worked for CBC as a producer for quite a few years and traveled a lot, then when I went with one of my recording engineers, we stopped by in some small town, Saskatchewan, and he ran into somebody he went to school with. And I realized that could never happen to me. You know, once when you move that far from home, that can never happen to me, that I ran here into somebody in Nanaimo that I went to school with, unheard of, you know. So I miss a lot of that. I was in Croatia just recently. The university celebrated 350 years, and the Music Academy also celebrated. And I'm the fourth person, but third generation at that university in Music Academy, right, of graduates. And so it was a good opportunity to see everybody, you know, that I studied with, went to school with. So I miss really a lot of that. I miss those kinds of discussions of, let's say, repertoire, you know, that we used to phone each other and say, you know, Beethoven's third measure, 35, what is going on? You know, I'm just saying whatever, but just that kind of connection, right? And I miss the connection with the city because there's a lot of family history in it. Those are kinds of things that you cannot transfer, you know, over here. But then there are lots of new things here. I mean, this year will mark my 30th year in Canada, you know. There are lots of things here that I would miss if I moved back, you know. So after a certain time, you become sort of you know, one foot here, one foot there.
I feel exactly, you know, the same way about New Zealand, where I miss certain things a lot. But I know if I moved back there exactly the same as you, I've been here 15 years, and I would miss things dreadfully from here too, you know. What though, so 30 years in Canada, how long in Nanaimo of that?
19.
And so what, maybe specifically to do with music, you know, this is obviously a small city. What is it about Nanaimo that is special in terms of musical community or music, things going on in terms of music for you?
Well, for me, from that point of view, Nanaimo was a difficult choice, right? Because there isn't enough going on, you know, based on what I've seen where I came from. So Zagreb, for instance, has three full-time orchestras for sure. You know, it has a symphony orchestra that is hired by the radio, has Philharmonic that is hired by the city, and has opera ballet orchestra, mm-hmm. right, that is sort of a separate entity. And there's one other musical type So they play musicals, right? And they put on musicals, a theater that also has its own orchestra, right? So from that point of view, there's a lot going on. And not to mention that cities like Vienna or, you know, anywhere in Italy are close by, right? It's not a long drive to get there. Here, to go to Vancouver, you know, unless it's an afternoon concert, you have to stay overnight. So it's a hotel room plus the ticket plus the travel, right? Mm. So I did that for the first few years as much as I could, you know, but then you run out of stamina, right? And I'm really appreciative of the fact that we do have a symphony orchestra here in town with Pierre Simard conducting, and that they do have in their season 8 concerts. It's not probably nearly as much as they would like to do themselves, but, you know, for all of that, you need funds, right? There has to be some interest and so on. So I'm appreciative of what we have here, definitely.
So we were talking a little bit off air beforehand about how there's a moment in Mendelssohn's overture that's very difficult to get right for the orchestra. Can you talk a little bit about why that's difficult? Like, what is it about that?
Well, there's the opening of the overture where we have four chords, which are easy for the conductor to cue, and, you know, there are no issues there. But then the fairies come in. And the fairies flutter and buzz around, and they're busy. And so for the orchestra to get that opening, the first few notes together, is difficult. And so when you compare a few recordings, you can hear that it's really hard to get into it. So it was hard to find the recording actually where they do a really good job right away.
As a musician in an orchestra, is that something, I mean, it's hard to generalize, but is that something where it would be frustrating, like, oh, I wish I could get this right? Or is it sort of, you know, I'm thinking of the idea of, like, no performance is ever exactly the same as another performance, right, of any kind.
Right.
It's almost like, could you see that as a sort of sight of, like, potentiality or possibility where here's this thing that's, first of all, a challenge to be met, but also it makes it unique, right, every time? Or are you sort of striving for that note perfect?
I'm sure that every conductor would like to have it perfect. I'm sure of it. And it's really just a matter of some, I don't know, 60 violin players, you know, getting it together. It's like the opening to Beethoven's Fifth. It's the toughest one for the conductors. People think that it opens with the pitch, da-na-na-da, as if that's on the first. It isn't. It's the rest. Ba-ba-ba-ba. So to cue the entire orchestra into that second beat after the rest is a challenge. It's a test for every conductor.
Thank you very much for coming in to talk to me. I really enjoyed it, and I'm looking forward to the colloquium presentation.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
You've been listening to Conversations in the Arts and Humanities. Thanks to Theo Finnegan and Sasha Kerbler for their conversation. Technical production by Robin Davies. Music by Greg Bush. The Colloquium series will return in September 2020. For more information, visit our website by going to ah.viu.ca and clicking Colloquium series. I'm Catherine Rollwagon. Thanks for listening.